Good evening. It is good to see everyone here tonight. And let me see if this will work. Oh, there we go. Let's go back one. Don't be intimidated by the next slide. It has lots of facts, but I'll explain it in a minute. As Nikki said, we've been looking at encountering God for the last several weeks. And I just want to start with a question. Feel free to raise your hand. You don't have to, but have you ever encountered God? So I'd say most hands are going up, maybe not all. Maybe that's people thinking they've encountered God, but it might be kind of a puzzling question because you might have to ask, well, what does encounter mean? Hearing God's voice, seeing him at work in my life. And I think that's really what we're trying to explore. What does it mean to encounter God? And what I want to talk about tonight is that it can mean a lot of different things. There's different ways to encounter God. And Nehemiah especially has some unique ways of encountering God. So that's what I'll be looking at. How did Nehemiah encounter God? And then what does that mean for us? So by the way, I think it's often pronounced Nehemiah in the UK, but I'm just going to say Nehemiah or else I'll be totally distracted trying to switch back and forth. So I know Nikki just prayed, but I'm going to also pray for us tonight. So if you can bow your heads with me. Father, thank you for the chance to be here tonight and just to share some thoughts with this amazing group of people. God, thank you that we have so many words from you that we can dive into and explore, and you reveal yourself through it. God, I just pray that tonight we would encounter you, whether it's through something that that I say next or through a line in a worship song or just looking at the candle lit and thinking about how you're the light of the world, or a word of encouragement from someone next to us. God, I just pray that in some way each person here would really encounter you tonight in a way that resonates with them and makes sense. So bless our time here tonight, and we thank you for this chance to come together and to worship you as we listen and receive from you. Amen. So Nehemiah is one of my favorite books of the Bible. And I do have quite a few favorites, so it's not the only favorite I have. But I absolutely love Nehemiah for a lot of reasons. I think he's an incredible leader, an incredible visionary and prophet, but he also encounters God through a lot of ways. And the next slide I'm going to show has a lot of other people that we've looked at as far as encountering God. And there's also dates and like historic facts, so don't be too put off. But if you really like that, I think you'll enjoy the next slide. Nehemiah is a little bit lesser known than maybe David or Abraham or Moses, so I thought it might be important to put him in context of what testament is he in, who is he, you know, is he before King David, is he after Abraham, and Nehemiah actually comes after most people in the Old Testament. As far as the timeline, he's very near the end of the Old Testament kind of time period. So he's well after Moses, after Abraham, after King David, and he lived in a time when the Jewish people, the Israelites, weren't in Jerusalem, really. Jerusalem had been destroyed by the Babylonians, and the Jews were scattered all over. So Nehemiah wasn't living in Jerusalem when the story begins. He was living in the Persian Empire in Susa. So that's important to know because, you know, that's his context. He wasn't in Jerusalem. He was somewhere else. And we've looked, just last week, we looked at Moses, how Moses encountered God. But one question I have is, how did all of these people encounter God? And if someone has any thoughts, you can just share them. But there's something that I found that all those people have in common, the ones before Nehemiah up there. So Adam, Abraham, Moses, David, Elijah, and Daniel. Any guesses as to what they might have had in common? Besides not being Nehemiah. God spoke to them. Okay, they did encounter God, first of all, and God spoke to them. And as I was thinking about it, I thought what they all have in common is that God spoke to them pretty directly, sometimes even face-to-face, as David was talking about last week. You know, face-to-face as though to a friend is how the Bible says that God spoke to Moses. And he certainly spoke to Abraham when he made a covenant with him and promised him, you know, descendants as numerous as the stars. He gave prophetic visions to Daniel. It says that David inquired of the Lord and got answers, and different prophets spoke to David. So actually, in most of the Old Testament books, God is speaking directly to people, either straight to them or through a prophet, directly sharing what God is saying. And I think that's really interesting because that's not really our experience today. It's not my experience. Maybe you wake up and God kind of speaks to you and you answer back and he speaks again and you go on your day. But for most of us, that's not really how we experience God. That's not how we encounter him. But actually, Nehemiah doesn't encounter God directly, in the book at least. It's not recorded that God ever speaks directly to him. And I just think that's fascinating because all these other people God kind of gives a message to. And Nehemiah, like us, isn't having a conversation with God. So he encounters him. Oops. Okay, so they encounter God directly. And Nehemiah encounters God indirectly. It doesn't make it less real. It doesn't make it less valid. But it makes it a bit more like what I think our experience as Christians is. So I'm going to look at three ways that Nehemiah encounters God. And there won't be a lot of like direct application time or reflection time at the end, hopefully a little bit. So I hope that you can kind of glean bits as I go through what I see Nehemiah experiencing God as, and you can take some bits for yourself as well. So the things I'm going to look at are how he encounters God through prayer, through circumstance, or just kind of the events of his life, and then through how he led others. There's loads of other ways, like especially towards the end, he encounters God through reading scripture and worship as well, but there's just not time to go into all of them, though I would love to, because I love Nehemiah, just to repeat. So we'll look first at prayer, and we are going to read from the Bible, and I don't have the words printed out up there, so if you want to pull one of the Bibles, Nehemiah starts on page 485 in the Pew Bibles. And Nehemiah is kind of in the middle of the Old Testament, though, as I said, the Old Testament isn't chronological in the way the books are arranged. So in your Bible, it's more in the middle of the Old Testament, but actually it comes almost at the very end. So page 485. And as you're finding it, again, Nehemiah was living in the Persian Empire, and he was cupbearer to King Artaxerxes, who was a Persian king. So as cupbearer, it means he was a very trusted servant. So he wasn't free, he was a servant, but he was trusted to taste the king's wine and see if it was poisoned, and then allow the king to drink that wine. So he's probably never lived in Jerusalem. He knows that there are some of his people back in Judah, but he doesn't really know how they're doing. You know, how's Jerusalem, how's the city, and how are the people? So I'm just going to read kind of the bad news that he gets in the very beginning. So, 1 verse 1, the words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. In the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, while I was in the citadel of Susa, that's in Persia, Hanani, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men. And I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that survived the exile, and also about Jerusalem. They said to me, those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire. When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. So just before I read his prayer, basically this is the worst report he could have gotten. So the city's been destroyed, and there are some people living there in exile, but they're really scattered. They're not living in the city. Jerusalem used to have a strong wall around it, and that had been torn down. So Nehemiah is weeping because his people have no home city anymore that they're in. They're just scattered, and they're not really doing well. So let's take a look at his prayer, because in his prayer, I'll just put those words up. Though God isn't speaking directly to him, Nehemiah so clearly has an incredibly strong faith in God. And in the prayer that I'm about to read, I really think he encounters God by seeing God for who he is, and kind of reaching out to the Lord's character. So I'll just read this, then we'll say a couple more things about it. Then I said, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him and obey his commands, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer your servant is praying before you, day and night for your servants, the people of Israel. I confess the sins we Israelites, including myself and my father's house, have committed against you. We have acted very wickedly toward you. We have not obeyed the commands, decrees, and laws you gave your servant Moses. Remember the instruction you gave your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands, then even if your exiled people are at the farthest horizon, I will gather them from there and bring them to the place I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. They are your servants and your people, whom you redeemed by your great strength and your mighty hand. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of this your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. Give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man. I was cupbearer to the king. So this man, meaning the king of Persia, that he was cupbearer to. I love this prayer so much. I would love to spend the rest of the time just talking about this prayer and what a powerful kind of intercession it is for the people of Israel. But the focus tonight is on encountering God. And what I love is that this isn't just kind of a mindless, oh, well, Lord, Israel's in trouble. Will you save us? Thanks. I know I'm supposed to ask this because I'm an Israelite. He's so passionate, and he's so confident in who God is. And he's reminding God of the words that God had said to Moses. Again, one of those face-to-face encounters that God had with Moses, saying, I know that you told Moses that you wanted to restore your people, and we haven't held up our end of the bargain, but I'm confident that you want to bring us back to this land. And Nehemiah kind of wants to play a part in that. It's such a burden on him. So though God doesn't like respond in a clear, direct conversation, to me it's just such a clear way to encounter God by identifying who God is, saying how great he is, confessing that they haven't really held up their end of the bargain, and then uniting with God's vision. And I just want to share a time when I really felt like myself and others were uniting with God in prayer and really encountering him. And there's times where maybe if someone's ill or really in trouble, when we can pray fervently and feel God's presence and peace. But I wanted to share a different time, kind of a time of hope when we were looking ahead. So who can tell me where this picture was taken? Taken at camp, so up at Loch Monivard or Karen Bray. And Libby, can you identify any of the people in that picture? Us. So that's taken at wildlife camp where Libby and I were, and some of the others as well, were last summer. And we went up in August, and that man there is Craig Mawinney, and Craig is one of the leaders in Northern Ireland for Young Life, and he was the speaker at camp, so talking about Jesus every night with dozens and dozens of kids from all over the UK. And that picture was taken in August of last summer, but the time I'm thinking about for prayer happened 2 years ago this month, so about a year and a half before that picture was taken. And it was before Young Life had this property, and they were just starting to think about buying this as a camp. It had just kind of come to their attention, and they were praying about it, and they wanted it, but they thought, we really need to go there and pray. That's the way that we're going to decide if we're going to go forward with this. So there were some staff from all over the UK. I was able to go up. Some of the board members were there. Some people from the US came over and just met there to pray. And I clearly remember sitting there talking about what would it look like for us to have this camp where we can bring young people and tell them about Jesus. And I remember Craig saying, I would love to be able to bring people here and tell them about God and show them his beauty around them. What an amazing prayer. So we prayed then and there that would be able to happen. And there was such a sense of unity and really feeling like this was God's will and we were just uniting with God. And then a year and a half later, to have Craig be the one telling some young people who had just kind of committed their lives to Christ, telling them about, you know, God's love and how special they were to the Lord. It was just such a fulfillment of that prayer that we had prayed a year and a half earlier. So I really feel like that was a way that we encountered God, and we've already been able to see the fruit of it. So that's just an example of kind of encountering God in prayer and partnering with him that I see in Nehemiah and then also played out in real life. So another way that we can encounter God is through circumstance. And that's not the same as coincidence. Sometimes people confuse the two words and think, oh, it's just kind of lucky things happen and that's it. Circumstance really just means things happening, you know, events kind of unfolding. And God can use those to direct us. And actually, just the next few verses in Nehemiah, we'll see how he does that in Nehemiah's life. So we know Nehemiah is the servant to the king, and he's just prayed this fervent prayer. And then a few months later is when the next verses take place. So I'll just read starting in chapter 2. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before. So the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart. I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my fathers are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king said to me, what is it you want? So what I love about that is God has so clearly set up that conversation from Nehemiah praying a few months before, praying for favor in the king's presence. The king noticing, I guess for the first time, that Nehemiah is sad, his face, you know, obviously looks a bit low, and having the generosity and care to ask his servant, you know, why are you so sad? What's going on? And then Nehemiah has the boldness to tell him the truth. You know, the city of my fathers, which your empire is ruling over, has been destroyed. And this is what's grieving me. And then the king saying, what do you want? You know, what can I do about this with you? God is so clearly at work in that conversation. And Nehemiah goes on to tell him and ask him, you know, can you send me with supplies and letters of transit and everything back to Jerusalem? And the king does. In fact, the king gives him more than Nehemiah even asked for. And he's able to go back just within a month or two of this conversation. It all happened pretty quickly. And so what I see there is God is using kind of open doors to show himself and to show Nehemiah, yes, this is what I want you to do. And I think that's something that God does in our lives as well, kind of using, I just think of them as open and closed doors. And later on, when Nehemiah goes back, other people join him and say, yes, we'll help you rebuild the wall. So others respond as well. But I also was thinking about, you know, in our lives, where do we see open and closed doors? And probably all of us can think of times when God opened up an opportunity to go somewhere or do something, and we were able to walk through it. Or maybe he closed an opportunity. But I was trying to think of things that we could all relate to. And whenever I think of God working through circumstance, I think of try praying, because David's so good about sharing testimonies of people who either see a bus or see the banner or someone gives them a booklet, and it seems like these random events, but then that person has an encounter with God, and we know it's not random, it's God working. So I was wondering, I have kind of a favorite story now with try praying, and I think it's happened within the last 12 months, but I'll ask David to share about the time when his laptop disappeared, and God ended up using that to bring someone to have an encounter with God. Let me see. Is there? Here we go. I want to share that.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I know I have told this once before, but you might not have been concentrating. And you need to concentrate, actually. This is about, it's last April. Nathan and I were traveling down to Tunbridge Wells, which is where Claire's mother lives, and we're celebrating her 90th birthday. So a long journey, Nathan and I in the car, and heading down the M40, and I have this little notepad computer that Nathan has kind of commandeered because he likes playing cards on it. So he'd been playing on the computer as we were traveling along. We get to the bottom of the M40 and a quick loose stop at the Beaconsfield service area, and a quick coffee, and then get back in and onto the M25, going around London, rush hour traffic, stop, go. And Nathan says to me, where's the computer? And I said, well, it's here because you've been playing with it. So we're kind of, as we're driving along, kind of looking in the passenger well and couldn't see it anywhere. And I saw this expression on Nathan's face that something had happened. And what had happened was back at the service area at the bottom of the M40, which stopped. Nathan had got out of his door, and the computer had fallen onto the car park floor. And we'd gone in, Got the coffee, come back in, close the door, drive off, leaving it on the car park floor. And I realized, I surmised as we were driving along the M25, I surmised that's what had happened. And I thought, well, I'm never going to see that again. About 20 minutes later, I get a phone call from a guy called Sean. And he said that he'd found my computer. And so I'm saying, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Just really profuse thanks. And then it occurred to me, how did you get my phone number? And he said, well, I opened the laptop and went into your emails, which is a little bit alarming, I know, because he thought there must be some hint there as to whose this is. And sure enough, my emails are, dear whoever, blah, 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 and it's David Hill, try praying, and the office telephone number. Well, it's a virtual office because we don't have an office, so it's forwarded to my mobile. So that's how he got my phone number. That's how we're speaking. I thought, clever guy. Just really impressed. I said, oh, thank you so much. And what he'd done is he'd taken the laptop and he put it in the manageress's office at the Starbucks at the Beaconsfield service area. You all with me still? I phoned the manageress, and she says very, very kindly that she would post it back to Edinburgh, and I wouldn't need to drive all the way back up to the service area, but she posted it back, and she wouldn't hear for the money. So just really kind and generous lady. And sure enough, a few days later, we get back to Edinburgh, and my laptop and I are happily reunited. So I text the Starbucks lady. I say, thank you very much, got it, very, very grateful. I email Starbucks and I nominate her as Employee of the Year, and then I text this guy Sean, who had phoned me and found it, and we to and fro a little bit, and he said in one of his texts to me, he said, by the way, I've started praying. And I thought, this is really interesting. So I do a little reply to him, and I give a little spiel about Try Praying, that it's a booklet for people who aren't religious and it's become a church project and so on. And if you like, I'd send you a copy. And he said, yes, I'd like that very much. And he gave me his address. And I said, there's a kids and a youth edition as well. I'll send you those if you've got kids in your family. He said, yes, please, I'd like one of each. And then I left just a little hook in my text to him. And my hook was, maybe it's more than coincidence that we're in touch with each other. And he replied, and he said this in his reply, and I still got it on my phone. He said, I think you're right. That morning, as I was driving to my work, his work is to service the Starbucks coffee machines, incidentally. So that morning, as I was driving to work for my first job of the day, I was so depressed and so discouraged about life that I cried out to God, saying, God, help me. And later in the day, I found your laptop with Try Praying on it. Amazing. The guy calls out to God and then sets up this whole set of circumstances where he sees the word Try Praying, and he ends up being connected with me. I shared this with a guy up here, actually, at a little prayer meeting in the church halls, and he rather humorously said, I can just imagine God, when he got that prayer request from Sean in the morning, rubbing his hands with glee, saying, you know, I think we'll do something really special with this one. Let's have a lost computer and a Starbucks lady and an M25 and a disabled child and an irritated father, and let's just see how much we can put into this one to get Sean to start talking with me. And so he did. And so Sean, there's things going on in Sean's life. We're still in touch. He's on a journey. So that's the story.
That's great. Perfect. Thank you, David. I love that story because, as David just kind of summarized, there's so much circumstance there. You being there at that moment, the computer falling out of the car, which is also a bit random. This person who that morning had said, you know, God, what's going on? Where are you? And God's so clearly working in that. And we don't always hear, you know, an audible voice or sense God saying something to us, but he's so clearly working around us. And sometimes we realize it, you know, sometimes we have a testimony like that, but oftentimes we're not looking for it, and we might not realize just how much God is working around us, you know, what people he's brought into our life, you know, where we are, you know, all of you are here tonight for a reason, I think to receive something from God, and there may be other people, you know, somewhere else, and they're receiving something where they are. So I really think God does work through circumstance. My testimony is, you can see up there the image for the Scottish Bible Society. When I started looking into moving to Scotland, that was the first place I applied to for a job. because, as you do, I Googled Christian jobs Edinburgh, and they popped up. And there was a job that had, you know, just the description of it was perfect. It sounded interesting. It included travel around Scotland. It was full-time. It was all these things that sounded really good. So I applied for it, and I thought, oh, this would just work out so nicely. But I prayed, if this job is meant for someone else and you have something else for me, just close this door and open the right ones. And while I was waiting to hear from them, I met Randy Nickel, who also lives in Ohio, and he told me about Liberton Kirk, and he told me about Young Life, and all those doors started to open, and then I never, I did hear from them that I didn't have the job and they weren't going to interview me and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, that's one door closed, but God's opening up other doors. So that's just how we can use kind of those open and closed doors to encounter us, to draw us deeper into his will and what he has for us. And then another way, the last way that we'll talk about tonight, where I see how Nehemiah encountered God, is the way that Nehemiah leads others. And it might seem funny that in leading others, you can encounter God, but I've definitely found as a teacher, as a youth worker, a children's worker, that as I lead others and tell them about God and invite them, you know, to learn more about Christianity and who God is, my faith is so strengthened as I tell others and try to be a model and an example. And in Nehemiah, I definitely see this as well. I think his own faith is built up. His certainty about the vision and the work of rebuilding the wall grows stronger and stronger and stronger. And I think some of that is because he has to lead others. So I'm just going to read a couple verses from chapter 4. So if you want to flip over, you can, or you can just listen. But chapter 4, verses 13 to 15. So Nehemiah is back in Jerusalem. He started work on the wall. He has people helping him, but there's also people opposing him. And they're insulting him. They're spreading rumors and lies about him. They're threatening to attack the workers as they build the wall. So Nehemiah is trying to rally his troops and encourage them. And after receiving several different types of threats and just real discouragement, what he says in verse 13 is, "Therefore I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families, with their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, 'Don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes.' When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to his own work." I love that because, so just in that little passage, and there's so many other passages like that where he's really encouraging them, and there's a point where they have kind of weapons in one hand and tools in the other to rebuild the wall and defend it at the same time. But as he's telling others, I have to believe that he's being kind of encouraged and strengthened by God as well. And he says that he knows that it's God in the middle of it because he says that God was the one frustrating their enemies. That wasn't Nehemiah's words that was discouraging the enemies. He knew that God was at work in the middle of that, even though, again, God wasn't directly saying, oh, say this or do that. So I think that by being an example and by showing servant leadership, so Nehemiah was working on the wall just like everyone else, even though he was the leader there. He was the one rebuilding it and helping people do that. And then as the vision was kind of attacked from the outside, he was defending it. And I think that as he did those things, God was really working in him. And I just have this one picture, which maybe you've seen this before as kind of a motivational thing, but it's the difference between a boss and a leader. And it shows the boss kind of on top being pulled by people. But then a leader is out front, you know, in front of others, showing them how to do it, helping them pull the weight or do whatever the task is. And I think by doing that, that leader's vision is strengthened. And if it's a godly leader, I think it's God's heart being more and more reflected in the way that they lead. So it's just a simple picture, but I actually get a lot out of that because it's such a visual demonstration of what I see in Nehemiah. And then also, as we lead others, you know, for the youth workers or those of us who work with anyone maybe younger in any context, I think that as we lead them, we kind of buy into that vision more and more. So that's one way that I see Nehemiah encountering God as well. And as I said, there's other ways. There's the way he helps the people kind of confess their sin towards the end of the book. And he has different musicians and singers kind of on the wall once it's finished, and almost like this military formation, because he takes that worship and praise so seriously, and he recognizes this is part of who we are. But we'll just kind of, there's just not time to go into tons and tons of other ways. But what I wanted to leave us with, while remembering, first of all, how Nehemiah encountered God, all these things are available to us. I can't promise that God will speak to you face-to-face like he did to Moses or to Abraham. I can't promise that a prophet will come into your life and say, you know, the Lord has a message. Maybe someone will. But what I can say is that I'm sure that God can encounter you through prayer. I'm sure that he's working in your life circumstances around you. And I'm sure that as you lead others, as you tell others, as you kind of buy into it, he's speaking to you as well. So if we can just reflect for a couple minutes, and then we'll sing, I think, one more song to end. Just a couple questions to maybe think about for a minute. Do I want to encounter God? And the simple answer is hopefully yes, but what does that mean for us? Do I want to encounter God? Or am I content to kind of show up at certain things, you know, tick the right boxes, be seen at the right places, and that's enough? And I think everyone here does want to encounter God, but sometimes we don't actively think, am I encountering God? When was the last time I feel like God was doing something active in my life? Or has it suddenly turned into months and years, and I've just been kind of going along? And then how will I encounter God? Is it through one of those three ways? Is it through a different way? Nikki, a few weeks ago, kind of demonstrated different ways we can encounter God, and those were great examples of, you know, speaking with others or meditating, all ways we can encounter God. So if we can just think about those for a couple minutes, and then whenever the musicians are ready, if they'd like to come up and lead us in another way to encounter God, which is worship, that would be fantastic.